podcast. It is Sunday, November 25th, 2018. I'm Benjamin Nabaya, and joining me today is my cyberpunk brother, John Nabaya.
We need to put a virus into the internet, and we need to break it so we can save
humanity.
Yes, we could do that.
We
need to find a virus.
Or you could go inside the computer and save humanity.
Yes.
And be the one to save it.
Okay, I don't know what you're referencing to at all.
You know, to save us from the reality that the computer is created.
That the internet created? Yeah. Not the computer. The internet created the thing.
Yeah, you could do that.
Yes.
The reason we hint at cyber, because most of you who are listening right now is probably enjoying your Cyber Monday purchases online. So, purchase correctly, rightfully. I'm a proud Cyber Monday owner.
I thought you were saying a proud dad.
Oh no,
Cyber Monday.
Yeah. Anyway, how are you, John?
I'm okay. I got a PS4. Well, we got a PS4 for Black Friday. The other thing that people consume or put money into, and then we got, so it was $200, and I got Spider-Man back. I got to play Spider-Man again. And I don't know how to play Spider-Man. I totally forgot how to swing and all that stuff in the game. I forgot how to do the combat. And it made me feel like, oh, why did I do this? Why did I spend $200 to buy Spider-Man?
And I purchased a Nintendo Switch. My wife and I purchased it. So if you want to be our friend, this is our code, our thing code thingy, whatever you call that.
Friend code.
We'll give it away online somehow on Twitter.
Yes,
it's pretty long.
Not the Nintendo Switch, the code. Yeah. We're not giving
a friend request code.
Yes. Yeah. It's as long as a SS number plus your phone number, basically.
Anyway, if you're new to the podcast, we usually discuss and give our impressions of what we watched, listened, played, or read throughout the week. And we conclude the episode with a main discussion. This week's main discussion is adding to the 18 freaking awesome things of this year. We only have right now 7 things, but today we're going to add 4 things to make it to 11. So that will be interesting to, you know.
And we have 5 weeks to make the 7.
Yeah. And we'll try to record every weekend of this. Anyway, also, if you are a new listener, I think there will be some new listeners here and there. Welcome. And hopefully you are delighted about the introduction. That's pretty much how that whole episode is going to be. But anyway, before we do all that, we have a trailer. This week's trailer talk is Disney's The Lion King. And that is a clip from the trailer, Disney's The Lion King. If that sounds so familiar, because it's just basically reusing Hans Zimmer's original score, and we don't get anything different.
And they're using James Earl Jones. It sounds like he re-recorded his little speech that he gives to Simba.
As Mufasa. Yeah, and this is directed by John Favreau, starring Donald Glover as Simba, Seth Rogen as Puma, Billy Eichner, is that how you say his
Eichner.
Name? Eichner, yeah, as Timon, Chichitel Ejiofor, Chiwetel Ejiofor, yeah, that's how you say it, as Scar, John Oliver as Zazu, Florence Kasumba, Keegan-Michael Key and Eric Andre as Scar's hyenas.
Oh,
I think
they're
all different names. Mm-hmm. Beyonce knows Carter as Nala, and of course the great James Earl Jones as Mufasa.
And he gets to reprise a role again as a memorable role, like he did with Star Wars when he surprised during Rogue One.
Yes,
like you didn't expect that at all.
Yeah. So this is a synopsis from IMDb. CGI and live action reimagining of the 1994 Disney classic. And that's literally what it says on there. No plot details, nothing. They just really, like, it's literally asking you to go back.
You should go to IMDb and type in the Lion King.
Yeah.
Parentheses, 1994. I just read that.
So good thing you asked me. So this is the plot synopsis to Lion King's from IMDb, the 94 version. A lion cub crown prince is tricked by a treacherous uncle into thinking he caused his father's death and flees into exile and disappear, only to learn in adulthood his identity and his responsibilities. So that sounds like
like something we read in high school.
Oh, like the author is from Shakespeare's one of his plays? Yeah. Anyway, John, what's your thoughts about this trailer? Basically, it's a teaser trailer. It's not really a trailer of this quote-unquote live action. I'm using that loosely because I don't think it's live action if it's in CGI. There's not actually a whole debate about that.
Yeah, so we don't know the way they do like the sceneries. I don't know if there's actual sceneries and they just digitally put the animals there. Yeah. It's hard to tell. Like, what was that movie? The one before, The Jungle Book, one that Jon Favreau also, they mixed up live action. All we know is live action because of the kid there. But if you see the making of, it's literally the kid on CGI background. So I don't know.
Or, but they don't have a human person.
They did build sets, you know, the thing, but we don't. I don't know what's the ground.
So you don't think James Earl Jones was on his fours acting like the lion?
No. Oh, okay. I can see Donald Glover doing it, but I don't see James Earl. Even Seth Rogen, I can see him doing a Pumbaa thing.
Do you don't think John Oliver was like putting a wingsuit flying around?
They should do that one commercial, like the B movie with Jerry Seinfeld, the teaser. On The Daily Show, where it was a bee movie, but they're...
I remember that.
That was a good one.
You dress up as a bee.
Yeah, a bee on the windshield. But yeah, I like the trailer. I mean, if you like the original movie, it's just a CGI version of the animals. And they look like too real.
Yeah.
Like, what's the monkey dude guy? I forgot his name. I don't know his name at all.
Rafiki.
Is it him? Oh, yes, yeah. Rafiki.
Who is played by...
John Canny?
Yeah, but he's Black Panther's father in the movie.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I remember. So he's in it, or they show him. They don't show him speaking, but that literally looks like a real monkey. Like, they didn't do the thing where they mostly do in live action animals where the eyeballs will be bigger.
Well, they didn't do that in Jungle Book.
No, I don't know, but I thought, if you watch the latest Dumbo commercial, Dumbo's eyes are huge.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
He doesn't... He looks like not like a real
Which
elephant.
Is also another classic film, Disney film that are remaking or reimagining as a live action.
If they're live. Yeah. Like, is that really... Yeah.
If anything, the closest thing to a live action Lion King is actually the musical on the Broadway stage. So if you want to see that one,
But yeah, I like the trailer. The music is the same, but they had the key moments they show in the trailer, like one that the stampede scene.
Yes.
And it literally has Mufasa saying, "One day you inherit this kingdom." Yeah. And it shows that scene. Yeah. And they foreshadow it in the teaser. And it's kind of cool. But you kind of... Spoilers too, if you don't know what happened to Mufasa during The Lion King. It's a very tragic moment. And it's just one of those moments that I remember as a kid watching. It didn't hit me as hard back then, but I know, he died.
Yeah.
And that's, I don't know what you should do. And now you can see that in other movies, that type of trope when a parent dies. But the trailer looks really good, as is right now.
So what we were hinting that, how the story is like an amalgamation of other things. Mm. Most specifically, it's heavily inspired by Shakespeare's play Hamlet. So I do find it fascinating that this is a reimagining of the 1994 version, and then 94's version is a reimagining of Hamlet.
Mm, yeah.
So we're just recycling themes.
Like Seven Samurai.
Yes.
I mean, we literally did that recently.
And Hamlet's made in the 1600s, and then it's so funny that we're now doing it. Mm. Now it's thousands of years later. That, like you said, you also hinted that it's a shot-for-shot trailer, and it's literally a shot-for-shot. There's something going around on the social media where someone put together the original trailer, and then they took the shots from this trailer, and They just, you know, side by side.
They're missing some shots. It's just, yeah. But it's almost identical the way they show it.
Yeah. And then I am excited, of course. I just think what is cool about it is that the cast, mm-hmm. I think what's, you could try to say like, this is like in line with when a musical comes out on Broadway, you have like the original cast, mm-hmm. like Hamilton, where you have Lin-Manuel Miranda as the main character, but now you have someone else in that cast.
Yeah.
And then they do say that when you do that, it does tend to add some other element to their acting in the show. And I feel like this is what's going to happen to this. So I'm excited, but also like apprehensive about the whole thing. Like, I don't want it to fail.
Yeah.
But the original film almost made $1 billion.
Yeah.
That was 94. And $1 billion back then was a lot of money.
You want to make... No.
I mean... Are you going to do the social network?
Yeah. You know what's cooler than
the original
dollars?
Film also cost like $45 million. I think this is well over $100 million mm-hmm. just because of the CGI effects. So, also, I'm also looking forward to Hans Zimmer as coming back as the person doing the score, mm-hmm. the composer doing the score. So I want to see what his new motifs he would come up with.
Do you think there will be any humans? Because watching the cartoon, the original one, I never thought that world had humans. It felt like a world where humans didn't exist.
No, I don't think it will have humans.
I'm hoping it will not show
humans. Do you
humans
think in the ending it will have a human? And then one of the humans will be like, oh, look at that lion. And then another one is, yeah, he's the Lion King.
No. What?
Don't think that will happen.
Yeah.
The Lion King. And then the font of the Lion King comes out. But yeah, that's our thoughts about The Lion King so far. It's a teaser trailer and it's coming out July of next year.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, moving on. What have you been doing, John, this past couple of weeks?
So we haven't recorded since Halloween, apparently, and it's been 2 weeks. I've been doing a couple of things. One, I'll real quickly talk about this only because I only played the game a little bit and returned it right away. We have Gamefly. And so my family and I played, also with an extended family, we played Super Mario Party for the Nintendo Switch. So if you like Mario Party, I haven't played Mario Party since probably the GameCube era.
Yeah.
So it felt like that, but a little different in a way. They have those same games. So if you're new to the Mario Party game, you basically have it's a four-player game. You go around a game board, and you go to different spots, each spot representing either good or bad choice. You get money away, coins taken away, or add coins. Or sometimes there are little challenges and stuff. And after one round of dice rolling, your characters are zapped into mini games, and there's multiple mini games in the game. And it felt like Mario Party. And this one's kind of different because you don't have a choice. I have a pro controller, so it doesn't even give me a choice to use a pro controller, only because you need the Joy-Con to use the motion control. So this game has a lot of motion controls in it. They're fun. It just gets kind of repetitive, especially if the games are just really simple and there's no really high stakes. I do like there is a new thing with the dice. So usually Mario games have this thing, a dice. You have a dice, you roll it, you do a number. But this one has this kind of cool thing that each character has a different dice. Like,
oh.
Some can help you a lot. Like, off the top of my head, I don't remember them all. But there are some, like, has four fours on the dice. So you have, but those four fours also has two zeros. So you have a better chance of rolling a four if you need the four space. Or you can use the regular dice, the one from one to six numbers. And then it's kind of cool because you can land in certain spots in which you can have little characters that help you throughout the game. And the characters also have dice. That's all they do. They don't really technically help you. But if you need like a huge space jump, like if you need to go to a different area and have that more space, you use them. And that's kind of cool. I like that little thing. But overall, I did enjoy it. But I don't see myself replaying that. That's why I returned the game. Because it's a game in which we played it probably four times. And I got the feeling like, okay, this is it. So there is also this cool thing in the menu where you can just play mini games, but it gets really repetitive. Because
I remember the original one had like this where you could play mini games on its own, but they also have like you could create a playlist.
Yeah, you can do this here. Yeah, same thing. You can make a little playlist, and I believe so. I think we did that. We went to one mini game to the next really quickly. I don't know if it's just, we're just collecting it.
So do you still have to play the whole game to get these mini games?
No, they're just open up already.
So all mini games are open?
They're all open.
So I can literally buy this or rent this game to play the mini games?
Yeah, if you want to. Okay. You don't need to. In the game, though, the board game, it's not open up. So you still have to get those. I believe, no, probably I'm wrong. Because you do need to collect coins in the mini game thing to probably open more coins. What I've seen, also there's an online mechanic, so you can play other people, just the mini games, against online, and you get coins for those too.
Okay.
So you probably do need to buy certain games with the coins. But yeah, overall, I like the game, but it gets really repetitive, especially if you're just playing with the same people. I've just been playing with my kids, and I can do the dad thing and pretend I'm losing, but I also try to make it challenging, so I don't want it where it's like, oh, they're just winning all the time. And it gets kind of like repetitive. And they get really like, there's certain games they didn't like the ones that had a lot of gesture, because it's not working exactly what they wanted to. But yeah.
Wait, how do you play with four players?
We didn't. We
passed the remote.
Yeah, passed the remote. We took turns. So we
how do you do the mini games?
We did do four players when we went to a friend's house and they had Joy-Cons. Yeah. Which one?
No, I was going to say, how do you do mini games if there's only passing
the remote? No. So you can't really do it that way.
So you just,
I wasn't going to spend another $70 just to get Joy-Cons. That's how much they are. It's a ridiculous price for those things. So the other thing I did, I actually watched this the other night, is a French film that's not entirely in French. I don't know if the dub version. It's a movie called The Night Eats the World. So it's
You say the French title?
La Nuit Devour Le Monde. I'm probably
think it sounds it sounds close.
La Nuit Devour la Romandie. So the movie is directed by Dominique Rocher and it's starring, I should mention, it shows multiple people, but it's mostly starring Anders Danielsen Lee,
I feel like that should be
Faranov?
Danielsen Lee.
Yeah, probably it is.
Danielsen Lee.
Dennis Lavin and Sigrid Boisez. So, and I just read that cast. Literally, it's mostly the top guy. The other ones are like in the beginning, and then there's I don't want to spoil the whole thing, but there are characters here besides him. But the story is about this dude who goes to this party to basically get his stuff from his ex-girlfriend.
Yeah.
And the ex-girlfriend has a box of his stuff, and he goes to the party, but he ends up like looking through his stuff and ends up falling asleep in her room or someone's room, and his door was locked because he thought the girlfriend would go inside the door and like talk to him, but she didn't. And then we get to see that when he opens the door, everything's blood, a mess, like something happened. And it turns out there was a zombie invasion. Invasion, but zombies were out. And then he is like a lone survivor in that building. And
because the door was locked and he was
sleeping? Yes, no one went through that door. So no, it's only him by himself, and he opened it, and then it's literally just him by himself.
So it's basically The Walking Dead, but instead of a hospital, it's someone's party's house.
And then the whole movie didn't look like it was dubbed. It looked like he was literally talking English, but I don't know if that's a really good dub. Like it's a dub version and it's just really well made, because every time they talk, he looked like it's literally coming out of his mouth, the words. So, I would say if you like movies like I Am Legend, or I've never watched this, Omega Man, or Last Man on Earth, or is that what it's called?
Yeah, it's called something similar.
No. The older one with, you will never get these damn guns off my hands. Charlton Heston. What's that movie? Is it Omega
Planet
Man?
Planet of the Apes?
No. There's another one he did. I think, what is the I Am Legend, or I Am Legend's original one. There's another movie, a black and white movie, in which is The Last Man on Earth. But I'm getting confused of the Fox movie with Will Forte, so I don't know if that's the actual one. But it is a drama, and I say a little bit horror and a little bit suspense, but it's basically him by himself in this building. And
it is The Last Man on Earth.
Okay. But it has Charlton Heston? Hitchin?
Yeah, I think so. Actually don't know.
Or is it Omega Man? One of those have... Or Vincent Price. I think it's Vincent Price.
It is Vincent Price.
Okay, is it Vincent Price is in The Last Man on Earth or Omega Man?
Omega Man.
Okay, so I'm probably thinking that one. So those two I never watched. I don't even know.
No, Vincent Price is on The Last Man on Earth.
Okay. But Will Smith is in I, Am Legend. Yeah. So pick one of those movies. So most of the movie takes place in the apartment building, and it's him doing his finding a routine to his life after the world has ended, and he's trying to find other survivors in not like willingly. He's mostly in his apartment looking down the window trying to find people, but he doesn't. And yeah, it's just him trying to survive and trying to escape this mundane routine that he has in the building. And it's pretty good. It's a really good acting. He does the thing that some actors like Christian Bale does. He does, what do you call that? Where you get into the character a lot.
Christian Bale
does it a lot.
Oh, Christian Bale.
Yeah, Christian Bale.
Yeah. Method acting?
Yeah, method acting. Where, so in the beginning of the film, he's like this really well-made guy, with nice haircut, beard, and stuff like that, and very like well-framed and stuff. Mm-hmm. And throughout the film, he actually loses weight, and then he gets skinnier and skinnier. His face gets thinner,
yeah.
And he literally shaves his hair like he doesn't know how to shave his hair. Like, it's all crooked and stuff like that. So the actor, I think you said his name right, Anders Dowlinson Lee,
yeah,
does a great job as Sam in the movie. And yeah, if you're a zombie fan, especially The Walking Dead, I think you should watch this. It's a really good film. The zombies are the typical the modern day fast zombie, so you see that, but they're not the real threat. It's his the way he live is like the real threat in the thing. But yeah, I'd say, and right now it's Amazon Prime, and then check it out if you do watch it on Prime, because tell me if the audio is good, because I feel like the audio is off in a weird way. Like, the dialogue is lower than the background noise. So yeah, that's The Night Eats the World. I really like the title too.
Yeah,
it has a really cool title.
It's cool. It's like, it's
it memorable. Represents Night of the Living Dead in a weird way. He's a knight.
Yeah.
You think of the knight as the zombies.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then eats the world. His world, I guess you can say. But yeah.
Cool. So speaking of that, I actually watched something that was also in the horror genre, but I'm not going to really describe or like what my thoughts about it. It's Darion Argentino's Suspiria.
Oh, you actually watched the new one.
I just want to say it's really great. And I can't wait till the new one.
Oh, okay. So you watched the older one. Okay,
yeah, I watched the older one. Yeah.
Where did you watch that one?
I have the Blu-ray.
Oh, yeah. I need to borrow that.
Yeah. But anyway, like I said, I've been watching, playing, and listening to like several things these past couple of weeks. But I just wanted to highlight a couple of things. There are two films. One of them is Jonah Hill's mid-90s and Bing Liu's Minding the Gap. So both films deal with like adolescence and skating culture. But at least one of them is actually a far superior film. So I'll start with mid-90s. It's a solid effort. It's a good director debut from Jonah Hill. But I feel like most of the film is just this conventional like film. It falls into like the trappings of like, oh, boy meets a group of other boys, and then he gets in trouble, and then they learn about friendship in the end. Like, the troubles go away all of a sudden after like a week of like doing stuff. But like, that's what the thing is. Like, it feels like it's just typical. Like, there's nothing about it that's unique aside from like Jonah Hill's direction.
Does he have a distinct direction?
Yeah, it's very like matter of fact, I guess you could say. Not matter of fact, but he does frame scenes just like how Paul Thomas Anderson would do it.
Mm.
But at the same time, it's just like a typical... I would say like it's... A lot of people claimed it to be like the Lady Bird version.
Oh, really?
Of a guy. Yeah. The guy version of a Lady Bird film. Yeah. Like the acting from the little boy who's like probably like 12 or something, Sonny Soljic. It's really great. And then there's these newcomers, Nalkin Smith, Olin Prenot, and Gio Galicia, which are, they're actually real skaters.
Mm-hmm.
He hired, but they're also actors. And I think all of them have like a bright future, but overall, like the film is like pretty predictable. If I were to say like there's a better film out there that came out almost like 25 years ago, is Kids.
That's a movie I need to watch.
Yeah, which takes place more in New York City, but it felt organic. It felt honest. I mean, that's also has like, that film has some problems too when it comes to like themes and what they're trying to accomplish. But over that one's a far better film that Jonah Hill was trying to tackle. Mm. But the other film I'm also watch, which also deals with adolescence and skating culture, is Bing Luz's Minding the Gap, which is on Hulu right now. So you could watch it, you know, right now if you have a Hulu account. So this feels like the opposite of Jonah Hill. It feels sincere. It feels organic. Granted, it's like a documentary. It is a documentary that takes place in 12 years, over a span of 12 years. So he has the ability to like have these characters, or not characters, but the people he's following, which are his friends, to build these characteristics and build a develop these character develop character on them. It does delves into like the director's upbringing and the childhood in Rockford, Illinois. I don't know how bad that is, but mostly it concentrates like probably the first 15-20 minutes on their skating, but it also concentrates like afterwards, like how the skating culture like saved, or how it intermittently just also not like helped them at all, like how it actually wasn't what do you call that? It reinforced like their trauma, or like how they were being treated as kids. Like they were, a lot of his friends had problems when they were young. They deal with domestic abuse in the film, and then how like 12 years later, how that evolved and how they are now. And then it also has like this redemption feeling towards the end. It's everything that I wanted, how Jordan Hill's films, mid-90s film is. It has like, it's heartbreaking, engaging, and raw, but I think Bing Luz film does it better. And it's even superior in like cinematography. Bing Luz, like there's a scene where he follows them as he's skating, because Bing Luz is also a skater, and it feels like it's spellbinding. And like,
wait, the cinematography, so does it look like the...
It doesn't look like your like typical... like skating video. Yeah. He actually uses like a really nice camera to document them. And the way he uses lighting, and the way he follows his the people he's documenting, it feels like a film, like an actual film, in that we're just watching them, you know, in their lives and whatnot. The film, the thing I'm describing is like, he has this camera, he's gliding with them as they skate, instead of like, you know, he's using fish eyes lenses, or being like steady still or whatever. So like the cinematography is really gorgeous, but overall it's going to be one of my favorite films this year, probably like in my top five at least. And it's just, you know, it's something that reminds me like how if you used to love films with characters, or characters that you feel like would have redemption, I definitely would watch this one. Especially, I mean, you could watch it as a double feature with mid-90s and Minding. That's what I exactly did. After I watched Minding the Gap, I watched mid-90s. I immediately watched Minding the Gap on Hulu. But yeah, and then that's about it. I watched that also, Fantastic Beasts, but we don't have to. Okay, the sequel.
Yeah. We don't need to talk about that. Yeah.
So moving on, this is going to be our main discussion. Our main discussion this week is adding to the 18 freaking awesome things of 2018. So we could go back and forth. So John, okay, you could start first. What are you going to mention in this list?
So I'm going to mention, I discussed this earlier, even the podcast and earlier in the year, I'm going to add Marvel's Spider-Man, because it's a game that I really liked. I like the story. And this year, especially Spider-Man having a really good year. From Infinity War. Hey, can I just put Spider-Man overall?
Yeah, you can.
So, scratch the Marvel Spider-Man. I think Spider-Man is having the best year in a long time that I've seen from him. Infinity War came out this year, right?
Yeah.
Infinity War.
And then the new Spider-Man movie will come out.
Yeah, yeah. So, if you want to go universe, Venom unexpectedly has a good box office in an odd, weird way. I watched that. It's an okay movie. But
how are the comic books?
I like it. It's back to status quo. It's a different writer. It's Nick Spencer this time around. So it's different.
Who's Spider-Man this time?
It's still Peter Parker. Okay. Yeah. And the video game, I really love the video game. It's one of the best Spider-Man story I've ever played or read. Just really great. And then you really can't wait for Spider-Verse. Miles Morales make his debut film that I
film debut.
Yeah, too. Film debut. We recently watched Wreck-It Ralph. I'll discuss that later in the week. But
is it literally called Wreck-It Ralph Breaks the Internet?
Yeah, yes, there's a reason why too. Oh no, Ralph Breaks the Internet. Yeah, it's called Ralph Breaks the Internet. But this is the first time I've seen the Spider-Verse on the big screen. I never seen the trailer, and it looks very beautiful. That animation's so good. I can't wait to watch that. But yeah, I add Spider-Man to our best awesome list of 2018. Freaking awesome list of 2018.
So I'm going to add The Haunting of Hill House. I'm not talking about Shirley Jackson's book. Probably I'm going to read that later on this year. But it's a Netflix television series that was created by Mike Flanagan that's loosely based on Shirley Jackson's novel from like the, I think, 30s or something.
And there's been two movies based on
that. The Haunting, both named The Haunting. Both are wildly different from each other too. Yes. So I think one's the 1966 version and one's like the 99 version. Fun fact about the 99 version, it's called The Haunting. They originally wanted it to be called The Haunting of Hill House. But you know what film came out that year?
Hill House?
No, the House on Haunted Hill.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So they scrapped that and be like, oh, yeah, we can't do that. Like I said, it's created by Mike Flanagan. So if you know Mike Flanagan, he made several good horror films. Two of them I watched is Hush on Oculus. I heard Ouija Origin of Evil is actually really good.
Is it like the Annabelle Creations? Like, it's a better movie?
Yeah. I don't know if he directed that. Let's see if he directed that one. On that one.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he did direct it, Origin of Evil. So, yeah, and then Before I Wake, I didn't even know he directed that. I didn't watch that one yet. He's making Doctor Sleep. Dr. Sleep is the sequel, apparently, to Shining. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you could do that. But yeah, I don't want to spoil anything. But if you like really great, dramatic, not melodramatic, but really engaging, compelling characters, I would say the Haunting of Hill House. It feels like the horror element of it is the background. Yep. And you could literally say it's sometimes the background if you watch the scenes. There's literally ghosts in the background as a scene is taking place. But it's really about people have ghosts in their past,
especially family.
I was describing it to my wife, how we're watching this ABC show called Million Little Things, mm-hmm. that deals with the same sort of theme, because then one of the characters there also committed suicide. And then how that suicide affected all of them. And then you get to reveal all these little secrets that everyone had, because they were thinking that this is the reason the main character committed suicide. And then how this is like almost the same dealing, but this time, you know, it's a ghost that's probably manipulating someone and whatnot. But it's gorgeous. Episode 6 is like by far one of my favorite technical achievement, yes, when it comes to films or filming something. The last episode is like a gut punch to you, because when they reveal certain things, you're like, oh wow, I need to watch this the second time, because I did not see that coming at all.
There's episodes, so I watched the show too, but I didn't finish it. There's literally episodes where they do a cliffhanger and the ending, and it's like, what?
Yeah.
It's like, it makes you want to.
So I watched this show in the past 3 days, I think. Mm-hmm. One day we watch six episodes. Another day we watch 3, and then before I came here to record, I watched the last one.
So we're doing the exact same thing, where we watched the first 2 episodes one day on Friday, mm-hmm. and yesterday we watched 5 episodes yesterday, and we're going to try to finish it today, because it's only 10 episodes.
So I think what we didn't mention, probably listeners are like, oh, it came out like a month and a half ago. So during that, when it came out was like October 12th. Yeah. So that was the week of my wedding, and that's the reason why we probably didn't have, we kept on pushing it back. Not my wedding, but for the television show to watch it. So yeah, I highly, highly recommend, if you're a fan of horror, The Haunting, or this was revealed from Mike Flanagan. One of his inspirations was the television show Lost. So, so if you're a fan of Lost, I don't think you'll be disappointed about how they use, instead of an island, it's a haunted house on here. So, The Haunting of Hill House is out on Netflix. You could binge watch that if you want to. So, John, you're next.
So,
going back to another Netflix television show.
It's another Netflix television show. Daredevil season 3, not the whole season. I think the season's good. It's just this one particular scene I really love. It's the get out of jail scene. I won't spoil it, but it's a really good scene that it's similar to a Haunting of Hill House scene, to the point where it's like, it's that one meme where Daredevil season 3, I did this scene and Haunting of Hill House, hold my beer type thing. And then, they both do a great job. There's also another show, I guess, is doing this. Who did it? They showed back the background of it. It's the one with the Jim Carrey show.
That's Michelle Gondry.
Yes.
I haven't watched that yet.
Me too, but there's like a behind-the-scenes scene.
Continuation.
It's really good. I really like scenes like that, especially done well, to the point where you're like second-guessing, like, where's the edit? But the Get Out of Jail scene in Daredevil is one of the best scenes in all of Netflix Marvel things. It's basically the hallway scene, but extended to 15 minutes. But that's a really good scene.
And then lastly, I'm going to add this as the 11th thing on the list is this week I also watched another film called Widows. This is the Steve McQueen film that was loosely based on a 1980s miniseries in the UK. And apparently this is his passion project. He always wants to remake it and make it for a wider audience, but also keep some elements from the original television show. So he took a famous novelist, what's her name? She did Gone Girl, Gillian Flynn, as one of the screenwriters for this film. So having that duo doing this film is really amazing. If you don't know, it stars Viola Davis, Michelle Rodriguez, Elizabeth Debicki, and Cynthia Erivo. They are the four main widows in the film. Well, that's Cynthia Erivo. She's actually, I don't know if she's a widow in the film, but I know she's a mother, but I don't know if she's a widow or if she even has a husband at all. But the entire cast is all talented. I also want to mention also the cinematography from Sean Babbitt. Bobbitt, I think that's how you said it. Bobbitt, is really great. He's been with McQueen in all of his films, I remember watching Hunger, Shame, were like really great films with, what's his name? He plays Magneto.
The new one or old one?
Yeah, the new one.
I don't know.
Fassbender.
Okay.
Yeah, and then 12 Years a Slave. He was part of that. So anyway, why I chose this on the list, and I want to rave about it too, is that I think most heist films fall into tropes, and then this film doesn't really fall into any sort of, at least the main tropes. It does come up like shows. Oh yeah, we need to get this map. Mm. We need to get these weapons. Like that's still there, but the way they deal with it is totally subverts it. Like it's the usual, you usually will have like Michelle Rodriguez be like this tough woman. Now she's not. She's everyone that you believe were more like tougher, they show vulnerability in this, and I think they want to show like the human side, like these are not action figures, I guess you could say, like they could go through it without any like cuts and bruises. But also like I like how I would compare it to when it comes to the story as The Wire, where you see the politicians also are involved, the communities are involved, their families are involved, how this heist will affect each and every one of them, not just because of the money or whatever, but just because overall, like, it's a heist, so you stole money and whatnot. And then I just want to say that Brian Tyree Henry, his character, is really great. Even Daniel Kaluuya is also a great... He's one of the best henchmen I have seen in a while. Like, I haven't seen that type of villainous, how you say that word? But, like, his way, he's maniacal. Like, he's just dark. Like, his soul is dark, you could tell. Viola Davis does a wonderful job. And Colin Farrell plays also, like, a politician who does a really great job. What else am I trying to think of? Oh yeah, so it doesn't follow it, it's although it's a film that subverts certain tropes and themes, it's also McQueen's most conventional film, and I think that's something telling that all his films have been his own type of you know, like they say, if you know, like an auteur, it's like someone who's a director who takes charge of his own work and makes it personalized. Mm-hmm. And like, you see that in Christopher Nolan, you see that in Quentin Tarantino, even like someone like Ava DuVernay. They when they take their material, they personalize it, and then that's where it becomes an auteur. And you can see that in McQueen's work right now. And then and he uses all their actors. And they are substantially like better now. Mm-hmm. Like they're like there's this actress, Elizabeth Debicki, I guess her name is. She's like this tall white blonde woman, and then you would think that she's like weak because how stereotypes work and like how we expect in films, but she's one of the strongest ones in the film, and then like also like Viola Davis, you always see her that. She's like in charge of everything, but there's like vulnerability, especially with her dog. She mm-hmm. has like a love of dog. Fun fact about the dog in this film, her name is Olivia. She has the same name as Game Night's dog, Olivia, because it's the same dog.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So it's, that's where they're
exactly
it.
The same guy. Yeah. I think she.
That should be in the. Yeah. Because of Olivia.
Yeah. Sure. Wait, did Game Night come out this year?
No, I don't. I think it did. Game Night. No, it's probably last year.
No, it has to come out because that's one of my top films.
Yeah, same here.
This year.
Yeah.
So we're at number 12, Olivia the dog, I guess. Yeah. So John's going to type this in.
Olivia dog. The dog
because of Game Night and Widows.
Widows and Game Night.
Yeah. Cool.
I bet you we can find other stuff she's in IMDb. Like, she's in Jurassic World. It's like, what?
But yeah, like I said, watch Widows just because it subverts certain tropes and themes. And it's really compelling from the dialogue to visuals. There's this wonderful shot. I won't spoil it, but it's a simple shot. If you know Steve McQueen, he lingers in shots. He lingers more than like 3 minutes at a time sometimes, where people would probably like, why are we on this? Like, I remember watching Shame or Hunger. There's like these specific shots where it just lingers, like it just stays there for like a little bit longer than you expect. Filmmakers will tell you, oh, you should cut it like only 10 seconds, but mm-hmm. he adds like 20 more seconds to this. And then he did it in this one particular shot. There's no actors in sight in this shot. It's literally probably a minute long. And it's just a car
really?
Driving through a neighborhood. Yeah, that's really wonderful to look at. And it has so much meaning to it. And there's like subtext to it. And then there's also like you could start a whole class discussion or discussion
about
off
that,
of that
scene.
Yeah, it's a 2 minute scene. So, but yeah, so that is it for our list. So right now our 18 freaking awesome list, it is grown to 5 more things. Really quick, with no order, and I'm going to probably mention who put this on here, is God of War. It's a video game. The PS4 version, which was from Greg Dietz. Black Panther, the movie, which is from us. Game Night, which I mentioned. Super Organisms, their album, or the music overall. Josh Brolin as an actor, as Thanos in The Avengers, and Cable in the Deadpool sequel. Ant-Man and the Wasp, Nino mentioned it. Fortnite, I think we all mentioned this all together. Widows, the film. Daredevil season 3, specifically Get Out, a jail scene. The Haunting of Hill House on Netflix. Spider-Man, like the character, just because of his
impact of
this year when it comes to films. And Olivia, the dog, from Widows and Game Night. Hopefully everyone got that list. So yeah, if you want to add your own, please write to us at contacts@thefreakingawesome.com. If you want to find all our other stuff, it's at thefreakingawesome.com. Like us on Twitter, follow us on Twitter, subscribe to us. Inscribe. You can inscribe the freaking awesome on your on your chest with a tattoo or something. And you could subscribe to us on any iTunes or any podcast apps, mostly iTunes or whatever. I listen to it. Where can they find you, John?
At Twitter, at the most organized Twitter feed of 2018, at Abaya Arts.
Oh yeah, and also we also have a Twitter for the TFA Now, at Twitter, and then you can find me at Twitter and Instagram at Benjamin Abaya. So yeah, like I mentioned, you can find all of us at thefreakingawesome.com, all the past episodes. So we have only five more things to deal with.
Yeah, there's 5 weeks left in the year.
So we'll probably add something each one. We'll see.
It doesn't have to be in those 5 weeks. We do have, is it 5 weeks? Was it the 23rd? So, or no, it's the 25th. So yeah. 1, 2. Oh, why can't I go like? Oh,
yeah. 1, 2. This is interesting podcast
3,
right now.
4, 5, 6. We actually have 6.
Okay, yeah, we could do it in those 6 weeks. But yeah, thank you for listening. Thank you for listening to us and subscribing to us, I guess you could say. I'm Benjamin Abaya.
I'm John Abaya.
And this has been the Freaking Awesome Podcast.